Welcome to Midpoint. I'm Sean Canaan. I'm the host of Midpoint Monday. Today we're going to talk about guns, and it comes just a day after the latest mass shooting. As a starting point, we'll hear from some students who participated in a school walkout last Friday and other participants from a town hall meeting in West Tampa on guns. And I want to hear whether you agree with them and what solutions you have. Here's the number to call, 813-239-9663. You can also email dj@wmnf.org or text 813-433-0885. Last Thursday night at the West Tampa Library, State Representative Sean Shaw held a town hall meeting on gun safety. He was one of seven panelists, and about 45 people asked them questions in the audience. Shaw is a Democrat. He's also running for state attorney general. I'll let the panelists introduce themselves in this audio clip, and I'll break in a few minutes to take your calls. Here's what I'm curious about. I'm especially interested in hearing what you think about these things. Are you a student who participated in a walkout Friday? How did that go? Or are you a parent of a student who did? And I'd especially like to hear from the Plant High School community because of the controversy that you'll hear about in this clip and that you might have heard about since Thursday or Friday. So what do you think should be done about gun violence? Again, here's the number, 813-239-9663. Email dj@wmnf.org or text 813-433-0885. Here are the panelists in that town hall from last Thursday. We'll be back in a minute to take your calls.
Hi, my name is Wendy Malloy. I'm the local group leader for Moms Demand Action for Gun Sense in America. Thank you very much, Sean and Jasmine, for inviting us and for always having an open door when we troop up to Tallahassee. Really appreciate that. Our organization started 5.5 years ago, the day after Sandy Hook. Our founder, Shannon Watts, woke up the next day and realized that she had to do something. She could no longer be on the sidelines where it concerns gun violence and our kids being gunned down in their schools. She was a mom of five, and she started a Facebook group, and it grew and grew, and 5.5 years later, we have 4.5 million supporters around the country. We have a chapter in every state. We are in the state house everywhere, as Sean can attest. We swarm in our red t-shirts, and some people hide, and other people open their doors and take pictures and listen to what we have to say. We work on legislation. Good bills are few and far between, but we support the good gun legislation, and we work really hard to fight bad gun laws, which are like whack-a-mole. They come up every session, and we show up in the hearing rooms and testify and try to get them killed. And we've been pretty lucky in the past couple of years. We've done good work, thanks to some good legislators on the Judiciary Committee. So we also have some gun safety programs that we present to school groups and civic organizations and things like that.
Again, I'm Tammy Schamberger, the current vice chair of the Hillsborough County School Board, but most importantly, I'm a really concerned citizen tired of the attack on public education.
I'm Freddie Barton. I'm the executive director for Safe and Sound Hillsborough, formerly the Violence Prevention Collaborative of Hillsborough County. We, too, were formed shortly after the tragedy in Sandy Hook. It was formed by former County Commissioner Kevin Beckner, who wanted to bring a think tank together of stakeholders, both private and public, to address the questions as to what can be done to prevent violence from occurring and growing in our community. Knowing and understanding sometimes we cannot predict the random shooter who just has something in him or her that wants to just cause damage. But we can look at the things that causes violence to happen in our communities, addressing those factors and treating violence as the disease that it really is. And we know to get to the disease, we must look at the factors. So we work on things to address mental health, to address domestic violence, to address substance abuse, to address out-of-school time opportunities for kids, lack of connectivity to services, transportation, unemployment. It's a partnership between the majority of public agencies in Hillsborough County. So the Board of County Commissioners, the Public Defender's Office, the State Attorney's Office, all three cities, the mayors, the police chiefs of Tampa, Temple Terrace, and Plant City, the school district, the Sheriff's Office, the Administrative Office of the Courts, and the Children's Board, who all came together in an interlocal agreement to say enough is enough. And we have to put our resources, we have to put our time, and most importantly, put our ability to affect policy change to the forefront so that we can protect our most valuable asset, which are our children. And so I too am here, not just in my official role as executive director, but in my real official role as a parent and as a concerned citizen to ask the question and to help answer the question as to what can we do together to say the children are well. And thank you, Representative Shaw, for everything that you have done. Thank you for the opportunity.
I'm Macy Lavender. I'm the co-organizer of the Tampa Bay March for Our Lives. thank you. and then I'm also president of the Democratic Club at my school. And then since March for Our Lives, we've been working. We arranged a town hall for our lives, which was last weekend. And then we also have, I will be participating in the school walkout tomorrow. So just for recent activities. Thank you so much, Representative Shaw, for having me. Oh, I'm a senior at Plant High School.
Hi, my name is Sophia Amir. I'm 14 years old and a freshman at Blake High School. I organized the Blake Walkout Friday, the 23rd of February. I organized a march and protest on the 14th of March, and I'll be attending the walkout tomorrow at Blake.
Thank you. I'm Marcus Fernandez. I chair the Northern and Central Florida chapter of the Brady Campaign to Prevent Gun Violence. Our chapter represents the 1st through the 15th federal congressional district in Florida, and our organization is aimed at, you know, promoting and advocating for federal gun laws and state laws that reduce instances of gun violence. And Representative Shaw, thank you for organizing this and inviting us all to have here to have this conversation.
I just want to say to the young people especially, I came back in town especially for the march that was organized by Sophia, and it was amazing. And it was amazing because it was led, directed, promoted, done by them without any interference from us. And I thought it was amazing, and I loved it. And so, I'm going to ask Macy and Sophia first, do you feel safer with teachers possibly being armed in your schools?
Short answer, no. Absolutely not. I don't think that a response to gun violence is to throw more guns at the issue, which I think is just common sense, but apparently not. but also, I don't think that that's a fair responsibility to put on teachers who are already criminally underpaid, who are already having to teach students, to expect them to possibly murder a student is absolutely horrific, to put that responsibility in someone's hands. I don't think any training that you can give to teachers over, what, a 6-week course during the summer to train them to use weapons is comparable to the extensive training that law enforcement professionals have to undergo. So those are just reasons I personally oppose it. Also, I just think it's wrong, and everyone opposes it for the most part that I've spoken to. So
she basically said it all. I don't feel safer with the possibility of teachers being armed. There's so many negative repercussions to it, especially for minorities and students of color. So no, definitely not.
Well, you know, the school board unanimously voted to not arm teachers. And so, listen, the kids say it best. I mean, we have the most intelligent and brightest students in Hillsborough County, and they articulate it very, very well. So there's just too many things that could go wrong, and especially in the communities that I represent. So we will absolutely not arm our teachers. So I don't know if you're going to get into the Guardian program and all of that stuff, but there's, you know, we're actually going to be meeting with Sheriff Chronister next week, okay? And he's going to be announcing his plan regarding the Guardian program. So I'm not at liberty to discuss it at this point, but we think that there's going to be a good compromise to really keeping our kids safe and our staff safe in our schools.
Yeah, I'll just give a real example. So one of our committees is a youth and gun violence committee, and it focuses on primarily educating youth about what happens in a gun violence crime, what happens if you are the shooter, what happens if you're just with someone who is a shooter, to really expose them to what happens. But we always start the same, every single mock trial the same way. We ask very simple questions. And we've done this for over 3 years now. And we've asked, the first question is, how safe do you feel in your community? How safe do you feel in your school? And it's so much of a routine that we just move right past those questions. We had a survey done through the school district, and 98% of the youth, in the last survey that we did 2 years ago, 98% of the kids said they felt safe in their school. However, only 41% of the kids said they felt safe in their neighborhood. So we were so used to and conditioned to this that we move right past the questions and go into the next phase. Less than 2 weeks ago, I was at Young Middle School, and we had an event. We had a Safe and Sound Hillsborough Day at Young Middle School for the sixth graders there. There were nearly 200 youth crammed into the cafeteria talking to us, and we asked that same exact question. There was a room of nearly 200 youth, and we said, how many of you feel safe in your school? And out of nearly 200 students, only 8 raised their hand. It's very seldom that I get stuck and I cannot talk. At that point, I had forgotten the rest of the spill, because it was the first time that I had ever gone into a room full of youth and that question did not go as planned. And so I think that once again, the youth are speaking up in a volume that we can no longer ignore. And whatever solutions we come to, we must consider their perspective, because this is their life that they must have to live.
I mean, and for the record, I'll just speak for myself. I have not run to any young person or teacher who believes that arming of teachers is a good idea. Unanimous. That's just me. So maybe there are other people who have got their doors knocked down for teachers to be armed, but not Sean Shaw. We will pay them to train to carry a gun, but won't pay them to teach. That's essentially where we're at. It's the state's responsibility to keep our kids safe. It's not private citizens. And so we should be addressing this in a manner that's the most, from a policy standpoint, the best for the state. And we're not, the way I would argue, the way we did it was a knee-jerk reaction. And we were trying to do our NRA politics the best we could. Listen, as I told you, the common denominator in these incidents is the gun. That's what we bent over backwards to not get to.
If more guns in more places made people safer, America would be the safest nation on the planet. And we're not. We have a 25% higher homicide by gun rate than peer countries. As a mother, the notion of putting guns into classrooms is just horrifying to me. We know that unintentional shootings, we don't call them accidents because unintentional shootings are what they are. They are preventable. Kids get their hands on guns when they're not supposed to. It is the state's responsibility. It's also the parents' responsibility to take care of safe gun storage, make sure their guns are unloaded, locked away. Yesterday, a toddler shot his pregnant mom in a car because he got his hands on a gun in Tampa a couple months ago. A little boy shot himself because he found grandma's gun. He was looking for candy in her purse. It happens all the time. So you put that scenario into a classroom. A Stoneman Douglas teacher left his loaded firearm in a bathroom somewhere, not at the school, and an intoxicated person found it. It could have been a tragedy. By, the grace of God, it was not. We also know that the whole good guy with a gun situation, it's a myth. It's totally a myth. The FBI has researched that one out of 160 active shooter incidents was stopped by an armed civilian, somebody who wasn't trained. But that one was a former Marine, so he was trained. But one out of 160 active shooter situations was stopped by somebody who wasn't called in as law enforcement. I mean, the numbers are there, the data is there. So we listen to our kids, we listen to the students who've been literally fighting for their lives, and we listen to research and numbers and data.
Reverend Gabe brought up the budget. So I just want to kind of tell you where we are in Hillsborough County. Before the mandates to put armed security in every school, we were spending roughly $16 million a year on security. So that's with our contracts with the sheriff's office, TPD, plus our security staff. But it also included vehicles and things like that. Salary-wise, is right around $12 million. Okay, so $16 million total for security without the new mandates, and the state only gives us $3 million every year. And now with the new mandates, although it was increased, we're only going to get an extra $6 million. So we're at $9 million total. We're still very, very short, but now we also have to add in more security now at the elementaries, because we have security in all of the middle and highs, but now we have to go back and put security in all of our elementary schools. So it's just another dereliction of duty when it comes to adequately funding education. And these are the issues that we deal with. Other legislators, they act like they really care about education and they really want to protect us, but their actions show something very different.
I just wanted to say, I feel like even addressing the issue of allowing teachers to have guns in schools is detrimental to the overall cause, because it, one, gives credence to an idea that should be preposterous to anyone who has an ounce of common sense, not to mention the fact that I am just as likely to be shot in my school as I am as likely to get shot at the mall, to get shot at the movie theater. Like, this is not a school-specific issue. You can be shot anywhere because mass shootings happen everywhere. So to say that you're protecting students by increasing school safety, that doesn't help us when we leave the classroom and we leave the campus, that, and we want to protect Americans as a whole rather than just school students, not to mention the fact that increasing the security at schools, I don't want to go to a school that's like a prison. I don't want to walk in and have it be like a military complex every time I go to school, not like, which also impacts, as I think Sophia mentioned earlier, it has negative impacts for people of color at schools, which has been proven. So I don't, it's just a horrific idea, which I think kind of glosses over the issue and is a way to kind of shut us up by saying we're protecting you by making it safer for you to go to school. But I just want to say, we as a movement, speaking for March for Our Lives Tampa and the national movement, are not satisfied with this. And we don't feel like this is a effective way to address the issue as a whole.
Let me say this. You've just heard the most articulate people on this panel that spoke about this issue are the youngest. And they also were that articulate when they came to Tallahassee and spoke to us. And you had members of the legislature literally say on the floor of the House, why are we listening to young people? Young people need to be at school doing homework. Young people don't make the laws and the rules. That's what adults are. That's what we're here for. And my response to that is, we haven't done the right thing. They are talking truth to power. This is what we ought to be listening to. So I just want to tell you, this is what we were dealing with in Tallahassee. They were exactly correct. We were not. And our response was not what they were telling us they wanted. It was not what the data showed was the most effective. It was not what was the most cost effective, and it didn't have common sense. But common sense ain't so common in Tallahassee. I want to go to this question here. I'll start with you, Marcus. What are some common sense reforms we can make right now to improve gun safety in Florida?
Yeah, I think Florida and nationwide, it's improving our background check system. I think that that has shown across the board to be the most effective. Right now, about 60% of gun sales go through our federal database for background checks. The other 40%, there are no background checks. These are weapons that are bought on the internet. They're bought at gun shows. There's private sale transfers. In states that have universal background checks, and I think with Oregon coming on board now, we're at about 8, where every gun bought, purchased, transferred has to go through a full background check. And I mean a real background check, not where you didn't get it done in 3 days and now you get your gun. And that was one of the positive things that we saw in Florida, was a closing of that loophole, which nationally is called the Charleston loophole. So you had to wait 3 days or until the background check gets passed, whichever's longer. But in states where you have these universal background checks, we see a drastic reduction in gun violence, particularly amongst law enforcement officers, about a 53% reduction in deaths to law enforcement officers. We see a reduction in crimes involving domestic violence. So I would put having a universal background check at the top of the list, and then moving into assault weapons ban and high capacity magazine bans. Those are two of the most sensible things. And the interesting thing is, and it speaks to our democracy, when a majority of the people in the state and a majority of the people in this country support both of those, yet we don't see that at a federal level and we don't see it at the state level.
Definitely, as you mentioned before, creating language, making it illegal for people with a history of domestic violence and abuse to purchase guns.
I would just second what Mr. Fernandez said. I agree that we should have a universal background check system, as well as I think that we should definitely have a ban on assault weapons. I don't think that's necessary. And I don't think any of these common sense reforms infringe on anyone's rights.
No, I just echo the same thing, that, you know, we need to have more comprehensive and universal background checks. We need to have a ban on assault rifles and assault weapons, as well as bump stocks.
Yeah, ditto. Absolutely. Those are the first things that come to mind when I think about it as well. Background checks need to be more strict, and certainly a ban on assault weapons.
Well, as the last person, yeah, everything they said, plus enforcing some of the laws that are already on the books. And I know that the state attorney's office has launched a new initiative a few months ago to make sure that domestic abusers have their guns taken away. We also are hearing a lot statewide about the preemption law, which is in the Constitution. Local municipalities are not allowed by law to enact any gun laws in their own areas, except for counties. You can correct me if I'm wrong, and there are 8 counties around the state. Hillsborough is one of them, where we have language that closes the gun show loophole. I'm sorry, I have all these laws looping around in my brain. Closes the gun show loophole. It's not being enforced. And that's a huge issue. Leon County just last week or earlier this week passed the same law. So there are now 8 counties in the state that are able to pass their own legislation regarding guns.
Well, that's Wendy Malloy. She's with Moms Demand Action. We also heard from other people who are speaking at a roundtable and town hall meeting on gun safety. We heard from Macy Lavender, who is a senior at Plant High School, Sophia Amir, who's a freshman at Blake High School, Tamara Schamberger, who's a school board member in Hillsborough County, Marcus Fernandez, president of the Tampa chapter of the Brady Campaign, Freddie Barton, executive director of Safe and Sound Hillsborough, and State Representative Sean Shaw, who is a Democrat, also running for Attorney General. And I want to know what you have to say about this. 813-239-9663. We are going to go to the phones in a second. We're going to answer some emails in just a second as well. It's 12:27 in the afternoon. You're listening to 88.5 FM WMNF Tampa. My name is Sean Canaan. I'm the host of Midpoint Monday, and we are taking your calls. 813-239-9663. Terry from Lake City has been waiting patiently. Hi, Terry.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing great.
Good. One thing I want to say, I am a preacher, and not only am I a preacher, I do own an AR-15. But one thing I must say, first of all, I'm kind of like the young lady. I do agree with her. A lot of these gun reform, it's not going to work. First of all, let's be honest. A gun ain't never killed nobody. The person that picked up the gun and pulled that trigger is the one who did the killing. I can take my guns, any of these guns that I do own. A lot of them, it was given to me through my grandfather, who was a gun he had on his own gun store. But none of those guns came off that wall, grew legs, loaded itself, and shot anybody. You can take a loaded gun and put it on the table and leave it there all day long, and it won't kill nobody. The point of the matter is we need to get back to the problem of weeding out the ones that have these anger, mental health issues, and the ones that lack moral and value. Now, it used to be, in fact, I don't want to get on the religious side, that prayer used to be in schools and all that, and I'm not talking about that, but along with the prayer being in schools, they used to teach morals and values to a lot of people. And a lot of those morals and values, and to be a greater person in society, is not being taught at home. So let's get back to attacking that part of it so these people do know the real difference between right and wrong. And then the ones that cannot get the wrong right, let's weed them out instead of going around and say, well, we need gun reform, because gun reform is not going to do anything to a person that never had a crime, never did nothing wrong, and then all of a sudden want to take a gun and then go in and shoot and kill somebody because they have an ought against that person.
So, Terry, let me ask you this. You said that, you know, the way that people get taught morals might be the issue. Are you saying that the countries that don't have as much of a gun violence problem as the United States, they just have more morals than we do here in the U.S.?
The point is, no, I'm not saying that neither. But when I am saying that the values and people's lives need to be taught a lot more better than just going after education, because I hate to say this to offend somebody, but I think being taught a moral and a value, instilling that in somebody's life and showing them how to adapt these books in their life to be a better person in society will go a lot better than a dead president that died in 1958. What is a dead president going to do in studying history or in studying all of these unnecessary subjects? Not saying that history is unnecessary, I'm just using that as an example. To get these political gains for people in the future, it doesn't make sense when you can take the value of somebody's life and the right and wrong, and they can go a whole lot further than learning about somebody who died umpteen years ago, that you're not going to use that knowledge nowhere in the future unless you're on a game show.
All right, Terry, I appreciate your call. Thank you so much for that call. And I want to see if people agree with Terry. And he did address some things that I'm not going to hit on, because actually the panelists are going to talk about some of these things in just a minute, and then we'll hear from them. But what do you think about what Terry said, and that argument that a gun can't kill anyone by itself? It's just people who are making bad decisions. 813-239-9663, dj@wmnf.org, or you can text 813-433-0885. We do have some people on the line, but I first want to read a couple of emails. And let me tell you first from Jeannie in St. Pete. Says, I did a search online to find out how many members are in the NRA. The NRA says it has 5 million members. The assessment agrees to that estimate. The IRS maybe assessment. Meanwhile, I looked up how many people live in the USA. It was 232 million. Actually, I think the number is way closer to 300 million. So Jeannie is saying 2% of the population controls our legislators. When will the rest of us wake up and take our country back to sanity? Asks Jeannie in St. Pete. Also, I don't have a signature on this, but it's from Cap Electric. The woman who just spoke, and this is, I think he was referring, or she was referring to Wendy Malloy from Gun Sense, Moms Demand Gun Sense. The woman who just spoke has it exactly right, and it infuriates me that no Democrat has the guts to say it in public. They don't want to destroy public education. And in a different email, this person clarified when they said they're referring to Republicans and rich people, don't want to destroy public education. They want it to be terribly inferior. They want to produce an uneducated public that's easy to fool, but most of all, they want to make sure that our kids grow up to work for their kids. So that's one person's opinion out there in cyberspace. What are your thoughts? 813-239-9663. We're going to go back to this discussion in just a minute, but maybe I'll take one more phone call right now and then come back to more phone calls in a minute. You can text 813-433-0885 or dj@wmnf.org. It's 12:33 in the afternoon. You're listening to WMNF Tampa 88.5 FM. My name is Sean Canaan. I'm the host of Midpoint Monday. Let's go to Elizabeth in Riverview. Hi, Elizabeth. You're on now.
Oh, all right, Sean. I'm a little confused here.
Elizabeth, I hate to do this to you. The line you're on is very bad, and it sounds horrible. If you don't mind calling back, and hopefully it'll be on a different line. I apologize about that. I'll put you right on when you call back. Let's quickly go to Nina in Carrollwood. Hi, Nina.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I was calling in response to the previous caller saying that the guns don't kill people, and wanting to increase the what he called moral education. We regulate just about everything in this country. There's no reason we can't better regulate gun sales. First of all, we put insurance on the gun owners. I think we'll see a difference. And in regards to moral education, first of all, you cannot regulate morals, but schools today do teach character education. And there was one other point, it's escaping me at the moment, we do have those systems in place. So if we ask kids today and teachers today, they don't want guns in the school. So why are our legislators pushing for it? Who are they representing? Because they're not representing their constituents who say they don't want it.
All right. Thank you. Yeah, thanks for bringing those points up, Nina. Thank you. I appreciate the call. And if you'd like to join in, 813-239-9663. We do have some people on the line, and I promise I will get to you. But let's hear a little bit more of this panel discussion. Again, we're hearing from, we'll start out hearing again from Wendy Malloy. I believe she's the first person to speak from Moms Demand Action. And this was from a town hall that was last Thursday night in Tampa about gun safety. We'll be right back. It's to take more calls. 813-239-9663. I want to know what you think is a solution for gun violence. Here's some more of the audio.
We know that black men are 13 times more likely to be killed by a gun than white men. My organization has been working on gun violence as a whole. As Macy was saying, we have not just these mass shootings, but we have an everyday gun violence problem in every community. We have 96 people a day are killed by a gun in this country. So the solutions. Our organization works every day to stop the flood of guns on our streets, to pass common sense laws, to keep guns out of the wrong hands, to institute common sense limits on where and how you can carry a gun. We don't want to take anybody's guns away unless you're a domestic abuser or have reason to think that you have dangerous intentions against yourself or somebody else. So just following the legislation and the common sense policies that we've been talking about, I think will help the overall problem. We also, my organization works with Safe and Sound, for one, to really get out into the community. People like Freddie are doing work every single day to stop violence that plagues our communities. Learning more about how gun violence affects other communities, I think, is essential for everyone to just really understand, you know, the differences among the communities and how we can be open to knowing what's going on with our neighborhoods.
So I'm going to let the experts answer that question. Here in the district, we definitely work with everyone, certainly Safe and Sound, and you articulate very well how it really affects not only our community, but what it does to our students and our schools as well. So I'm going to let you take my time on that.
So again, from personal experience, when we talk about how gun violence is affecting our different communities, there's a word that we need to address, and it's desensitized. Shameless plug, May 19th, Safe and Sound Hillsborough is having its violence prevention conference where we'll be talking about how our communities are becoming desensitized to this. The reason I say that is because a few weeks ago, now the tragedy in Parkland is a true tragedy, and it is, I hope that the momentum stays so that we continue to have the tough conversations. However, shortly after Parkland happened, and we've seen article after article after article, news segment after news segment, shortly after Parkland, not 5 minutes away from where we are now, there was a shooting, multiple shootings, at a block party in West Tampa. Depending on who you ask, there were 8 or 9 individuals that were shot. Now, that's the first point. The second point is that happened on a Saturday. 2 days after that Saturday, I met with a group of youth who are helping me plan this violence prevention conference. And the highlight of my weekend was I was ceiling grout and I was trying to hang a TV that was too high above my head because I wasn't blessed with the height of Representative Shaw.
You're probably more handy than I am.
So I had what I figured was a tough weekend. 2 days later, on a Monday evening around 7:30, 8 o'clock, I'm meeting with 24 teenagers to help me plan this conference. And I was complaining to them about how my back was hurting because of a rough weekend I just had. And I asked them, well, what did you do this weekend? And plain faced, straight laced, a 17-year-old junior high school student with an arm in a sling said, I got shot. So two things bothered me there. One, what do you mean you got shot on Saturday and it's almost 8 o'clock at night on a Monday and you're out hanging out with a stranger named Mr. Freddie? Where was mom? Where's mom? The second thing, the most troubling part, and I haven't let this go weeks later, is that 24 youth looked at me as this young lady told me this, one of our students, and not one of them had an issue. Every single one of them felt this was just commonplace. To quote one of the youth, Mr. Freddie, it is what it is. There is something seriously wrong because in addition to that, the 2.5 part of that is I don't recall seeing maybe but one little mention of this incident that happened in our town, in our community, not a stone's throw too far away from here. So we have an everyday gun violence problem. We have an everyday community violence problem, and we have somehow glazed over it because of the communities that this stuff is happening in. So when we talk about how is gun violence affecting some of our communities, we have got to get back to the point where we say this is not okay. Any type of violence is not okay, but when it is affecting our youth, we have got to, no matter what side of this thing you're on, whether you're Democrat, Republican, Independent, Tea Party, No Party, Party City, I don't care,
We've got to come together to let people know it's not okay to just say it is what it is. So it's affecting certain communities a little differently. But at the end of the day, we've got to figure out a way to get everybody to understand we got to talk about this now.
I agree with that. Right. Snaps. I'll also approach it from a little different perspective. The economic conditions and the education and the opportunities, the lack thereof in certain communities, clearly perpetuate this problem. And so there is a certain economic disparity component to this that we have to talk about, recognize, and understand that perpetually poor communities, hope isn't there, choice isn't there. You're going to react different when you're in different circumstances. That's one. Number two, as Freddie said, we've had tragedies. That's what was, most illuminating about the Parkland one, that where the young people forced us to do something. The legislature didn't do anything when Pulse happened. Not a thing. Not one law was changed after Pulse. Not one law has been changed, when you have these constant drip of killings in East Tampa and the other communities I talked about. We had something in response to Parkland because of these two people sitting next to you, because young people forced us to address it. I can't overemphasize that fact. Those were 10,000 young people that marched on Tallahassee and yelled at us and demanded of us change, demanded of us that we keep them safe, demanded that we do what we swore an oath to do when we all got elected. And that is to be honest to the Constitution and to take your oath of office seriously. And if keeping your kids safe at a school in one of them, then you ran for the wrong office. So there's a lot of components to this. But again, and I sound repetitive, it boils down. There are too many guns on our streets and it's too easy to get them. And when I asked the question about common sense gun reforms, you heard common sense reforms. You didn't hear one person up here talking about snatching your weapon. You didn't hear one person up here talking about how we should repeal the Second Amendment. You didn't hear one person up here talking about anything but common sense gun reforms that would make our streets safer and make our kids safer in schools. Just keep that in mind, because when you walk out of here and you say the words common sense gun reform in a sentence, and you're in front of people that don't think like we do, maybe in this room, they're going to accuse you of being a gun-snatching nut. And that is not what we are. We're looking for solutions to the problem of why we have so many guns on our streets and why it's so easy to get them.
I think as Ms. Molloy addressed earlier, and then as you just went into, obviously this issue, we have to address the elephant in the room, which is the reason that Parkland is being paid attention to is because it happened to a primarily white school in an affluent neighborhood. And that's just the facts of the issue. It's the way that the media covers it. It's the reality of our world, unfortunately. And while gun violence is an everyday issue that affects communities deeply, a lot of times it is silenced because the media doesn't necessarily pay attention to it or put it in the forefront of the spotlight. I think the best thing that we can do with the spotlight that we've been given and the platform that we've been given through all the attention that March for Our Lives and the movement is getting is use our platform and our privilege to call attention to these issues that have been neglected for so long and try to just raise awareness as a whole. I think the issue is so polarizing. It's such a partisan issue at the moment, as Representative Shaw just went into. And it shouldn't necessarily be like, if you're a Republican, it doesn't make you bulletproof. You can still be shot as easily as I can. It should not necessarily be a red versus blue issue. Unfortunately, it is, which I think is what you see in our government, which I think is more to do with NRA money backing necessarily more than morals, which is also the reality of our political situation. Money does dictate politics. But I think the best thing that we can do as a community is just try to keep the conversation going and keep this open forum kind of discussion. As long as people feel comfortable to share their views, they're going to want to address and create a solution to this problem. I don't think anyone wants to be shot. Nobody wants to see kids die in front of them. I think that's a commonality that we all have, which is so great about this issue. It truly is life or death for all of us. So no matter which way you're affected or which community you're a part of, you're affected by gun violence the same, which I think is why we've been able to create change on this, which I hope we can keep the momentum going in the future and keep this atmosphere kind of collaboration and discussion and try to get more effective reforms passed on a national level.
Wow, very eloquently put. Definitely as a young queer student of color that's also female, I'm definitely more affected by gun violence, but still not as much as other students at my school. Because of the school I attend, I definitely have a lot of friends who have been shot, who have handled guns before, who have this crime in their neighborhoods, who deal with this on a daily basis, and to them it's common. And it's sad that that shouldn't be how the way that it works. We definitely have to address it. And like Macy said, because of the demographic of Parkland, it was talked about more on media platforms.
Okay, I'm going to sort of give what and frame this when we talk about community. You can talk about.
All right, well, I want to pause it right there because there are a lot of people on the line, and I do want to get to your calls. You're listening to a town hall forum that happened last Thursday night. We'll go back to it in a few minutes, but I do want to get to some phone calls first. The last woman, the last young lady that we heard a few minutes ago is a freshman at Blake High School, Sophia Amir. Before that, we heard Macy Lavender, who is a senior at Plant High School. They are two of the student leaders in the area in the March for Our Lives actions locally and in Tallahassee. We also have been hearing from Tamara Schamberger, the school district member in Hillsborough County. Marcus Fernandez is the voice we heard at the very end that we'll hear his answer shortly. He's from the Brady campaign to end gun violence. We've been hearing from Wendy Malloy, Moms Demand Action, and Freddie Barton from Safe and Sound Hillsborough and from State Representative Sean Shaw. My name is Sean Canaan. It's 12:47 in the afternoon. You're listening to 88.5 FM WMNF.org. You're listening to WMNF Tampa. And let's go to Elizabeth, and hopefully the phone connection is better now. Hi, Elizabeth.
Yes, I think I can be heard now.
Yeah, sounds great. Go ahead.
Some of these young folks are, well, they're a lot smarter than I was, and people in my generation were. What they are talking about is what has troubled me for quite some time. Bribery. It's not called bribery anymore because the Congress changed the language. It's now donations or contributions or something. But it still is dirty money. It comes from the gun lobby. There is a woman who has been holding court in Tallahassee for the last, 20, 30 years, name of Marion Hammer, who has been handing out bribes to our legislature. I don't know the amounts of money or who accepts them. I don't have that information. But it's there. Somebody can find it. And it is now coming up on election time again. And I haven't heard anyone speak of this bribery which is going on. That's a dirty word. But it's going on. And that is a bad problem that we have. Thank you for the time.
Elizabeth, thanks so much for calling in. Political donations, which Elizabeth is calling bribery, we will definitely make sure we continue to concentrate on that during this election season as we have in elections past. So thank you for bringing that up. And speaking of the NRA and Marion Hammer, here's an emailer who agrees with Elizabeth. Tony from St. Pete says, particularly hypocritical is the Florida Republican-dominated legislature putting fines on cities and counties that try to enact gun regulation more than the state minimum as dictated by Marion Hammer and the NRA. Crowded areas like Hillsborough or Pinellas counties are far different from rural backwoods panhandle counties. Republicans always claim to be for local control, keep government as close to the people as possible, they said, when it was Obama and the federal government trying to regulate. Now, because of the money our gerrymandered legislature receives from the NRA lobbyists, they want to end local control, says Tony in St. Pete. So that's what Tony is saying, and Elizabeth is also talking about donations from the NRA. What do you think? 813-239-9663. You can email DJ at WMNF.org or text 813-433-0885. It's 12:50 in the afternoon. Let's hear from Mike in Bradenton. Hi, Mike.
Hey, Sean. I tip my hat to those students. I marched with them. I agree with what they're doing. And I think we all need to remember some hard numbers that the NRA doesn't want you to know, and that is 80% of Americans don't own guns. So it's more normal in our society to not own a gun
than to own one by a wide margin. And of the Americans that own guns, it's something like 3% of them own half of them. And if you look at us compared to the rest of the world, we're 5% of the world's population. We own somewhere between 35 and 50% of the world's guns. Now, this is an outrageous situation. And the NRA has bought these politicians, our U.S. Congress, at a very cheap price. And we're going to have to claw the controls away from these paid-off politicians to get sensible gun safety regulations in place. I mean, there's 30,000 Americans that are dying every year from guns. That's a Vietnam that's self-inflicted every 2 years. So it says something really sad about this country when I have to turn to middle school and high school children for leadership that I can't get from Tallahassee and Washington, D.C. I tip my hat to them. They're doing an amazing job, and this is just the beginning. This movement's not going anywhere except forward.
All right, Mike, thanks for those thoughts. 813-239-9663. Do you agree with Mike? Do you disagree? Let's go to at least one more caller before we get back to some more audio. How about Cork in Sarasota? Hi.
Yes. Thank you, Sean. I was talking to a fellow the other day about gun control, and he mentioned the Second Amendment, and he said, so it's illegal to try to control guns. I said, well, what's that all about? And he says, well, we need to have a militia so that if we need to fight the government, we'll be prepared. And I was really tempted to say, do you know that that's treasonous talk? So I think that's part of what goes on here. There's a lot of people who are really afraid of change that's going on, and they're thinking that maybe they're going to have to fight the government. Now, the other part that I had was that in the Constitution, under powers of the Congress, one power is provide for calling forth the militia, which is in capital M, just as it is in the Second Amendment. And a little later on, it says to provide for organizing, arming, and disciplining the militia, and for governing such part of them as may be employed in the service of the United States. So there is something in the Congress that that word militia is not maybe quite what a lot of other people think it should be. And the third point was, there's no particular thing that we would do that would completely eliminate the problem. But that thing might be to make it better. And then another thing we could do, make it a little better. There is no perfect solution. All you can ever hope for is to make things better. And, well, thank you very much, and yay for the young folks there. So, okay, bye-bye.
All right, bye. Thanks for the call, Cork. And when you said your friend was saying that it's illegal to control guns or firearms, then I was thinking that, you know, a synonym maybe perhaps for control would be regulation, which is actually the as Rob was pointing out last hour, of course, literally in the Second Amendment. So to say that it's illegal to regulate guns shows an ignorance, I think, of the Constitution. 813-239-9663. We do have some couple of people on the line, so stay on the line. We will get to you. Let's go back to a couple more minutes of this discussion. We'll begin with, this is Marcus Fernandez. He's with the Brady Campaign to End Gun Violence, the local chapter of that. So we'll go back to this discussion, and then we'll take your calls right after that. 813-239-9663.
About community a couple of different ways. It's a geographical place in which a group of people live, or it's a, you have similar views on religion or whatever it might be. But if you look at community from a standpoint of what's good for me and my family, and then what's good for me, my family, and my neighbor, and then my city, and then my state, and then my country. And this used to be something that we called solidarity. Right, that we stood together for common things that not just benefited an individual, but benefited society altogether. right? The adverse to that is every man, woman, and child for themselves. You eat what you kill, so to speak. And what everybody before me is talking about are socioeconomic pressures that are put on people that ultimately lead to violence. The gun is a way to lethalize that violence, right? It just is. It is in every aspect of our community. Sean, sort of, I'm a lawyer, so when he gave his legislative update, he set a predicate, so to speak. Okay, all of the things that he talked about, reduction in education, reduction in teacher pay, reduction in this payday loan bill, all of the different issues that he talked about directly relate to socioeconomic pressures that are put on people. And I'm not just talking about poverty. I'm talking about access to education. I'm talking about someone's subjective view of their status and their ability to move upward in life. I'm talking about housing segregation. All of these things are contributors to violence. And a gun is a way to lethalize that violence. We see it across the board for suicide. 2/3 of gun deaths come from suicide. And a gun has about a 95 percentile lethal rate. And the percentage of time a gun is used in suicide is 95% successful. Then you look at domestic violence, and we see the rates of domestic violence and how that leads to homelessness. When you see a child growing up in the street, they tend to be subjected to violence. This is how we see desensitization to it. So when we can step back for a minute and think about our community in terms of socioeconomic development and how those things are tied to violence, then we really start talking about solutions for the real problem, right? So the gun is much like the opiate, right, for what the true symptoms of violence are, right? It's just not going to fix everything. It's having these conversations on a multitude of issues that contribute to violence in our community.
I'm going to let Aiden come up, if you don't mind, and ask your question.
I'm hearing a lot about how guns create fear in youth, but particularly, what is the most necessary step in ensuring the youth's safety?
My answer would be the common sense gun reforms that we talked about. The Second Amendment is not 100% sacrosanct. You can regulate weapons under certain conditions. The Supreme Court has said that. Justice Scalia, as you said, held that. I mean, that's, you can regulate it. You just have to regulate it in the right way. And some of the common sense reforms I think you heard up here are exactly that, common sense.
Well, State Representative Sean Shaw, he called that town hall meeting that we've been hearing from. We only heard about maybe half of it, and I'm going to put the rest of it up on the website, WMNF.org, later today. You can watch it and listen to it. And we also heard from Freddie Barton from Safe and Sound Hillsboro, Wendy Malloy from Moms Demand Action, Sophia Amir, a freshman at Blake High School, Macy Lavender, a senior at Plant High School, Tamara Schamberger, a school board member in Hillsboro, and Marcus Fernandez from the Brady Campaign. And now we're going to hear from you, Anthony, in Bradenton. You're on the line. What would you like to say on WMNF Tampa?
Hello?
Hi, Anthony. You're live on the air.
Awesome. So, do you own a gun?
I'm not going to tell you whether I own a gun or not. Why are you asking? Why don't you just get to your point?
Because a lot of people that are anti-gun don't own a firearm themselves, never been through the process or looking to the laws or the real statistics provided by the BTFE or ATF.
I've heard a lot of statistics in this hour from a lot of smart people. I don't know what you're talking about.
But if you go to the ATF website, they have the true numbers that show most gun deaths are suicide. And if you look at Britain, they're now banning knives because they ban guns. It's just a perpetual cycle of taking stuff away from the people.
So that fewer people get harmed. I mean, I think that people see protecting their, you know, the population as something that can happen. That's fine.
But if you keep banning, what's the next thing here? Or in Britain, they're now banning knives. Were you going to ban vehicles? There's more people die from texting and driving than firearms. Or
actually, texting and driving is something that's regulated in a lot of places.
Yeah, but if it's not enforced, it doesn't matter how many laws you have. Like, all the laws you already have on guns, if they're not enforced, they don't do anything.
Yeah, I've heard several panelists in this discussion say that we should have enforce the regulations that are on the books. So I thank you for that, Anthony. I wish you, I wish I'd gotten to you sooner because I think that we would have had a good conversation. Thank you to everyone who called, emailed, and texted today. If you're still on hold, Ross in Sarasota, Anthony, if you want to say more, leave me a voicemail. Also, Amy, who dropped off right before I was about to put her on the air. If you still have something to say in this conversation, give me a call, 813-238-8001, and leave me a voicemail at extension 114. I'll play your message next show. You can also join the conversation online at wmnf.org/news. And as I said, that will be the audio and video from this panel will be up there later. Alvaro has been our engineer. Frank Knox and DT have helped out with phones, etc. I'm Sean Canaan. I'm the host of WMNF News Midpoint Monday. I've got a special show planned for next Monday, so I hope you'll join us. We'll hear from one of the young people who is suing Governor Rick Scott in the state of Florida to take action on climate change. We'll also have one of their lawyers, so tune in next Monday at noon on WMNF's Midpoint. Stay tuned now for John Gilmore, an executive session that's coming up after NPR headlines on WMNF Tampa, St. Petersburg, Sarasota. Thanks.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh.